And I know you want to talk about other things. I want to talk about the Gulf. I have breaking news tonight that is very important for people to hear.
Hit us with your best shot.
And I would like to bring Robin on in a few minutes because she was down there, you know, risking her life, her health, to do things for people on the ground. And because she was there, I want her to report firsthand what she saw and what she did not see and who she interacted with, because that's an important part of the rest of the story. Here's the breaking news. Everybody in the media, MSNBC, Fox, CNN, CBS, ABC, all of them, are treating this like a catastrophe that is over except for the cleanup. I have news. It is not over. In fact, it may not even have begun. I have reports tonight from very credible inside sources. When I say inside, I mean really inside. Inside BP, inside the U.S. government, that surface ships using GPS and depth finders have recorded in the last month the emergence of a bubble under the Gulf of Mexico floor, something between 15 and 20 miles across.
This is serious.
And tens of feet high. Now, this is preliminary because that measurement, as you know, GPS is degraded for civilian use, so we don't have access to the highest possible resolution of GPS data from the military side, or if it exists, they're not telling us. But this creation of a bubble around the wellhead, the Deepwater Horizon's, you know, BOP sitting on the ocean floor.
Is this a gas bubble?
This would be a gas bubble. Now, let me go through the physics of what's going on. They started early this year drilling this well. Several geologists, one in particular, who became president of one of the companies that basically runs around the world and puts out well catastrophes.
Okay.
In fact, this individual who you should have on the show, and I have made preliminary steps in moving in that direction, and he has agreed under certain conditions to be a guest. This is the guy who was in charge of putting out all the well fires in Kuwait. Remember how they were saying it would take 10 years?
He's like a Red Adair, right?
He's better than Red Adair. So he's got a proven track record. Anyway, he was writing documents and reports scathingly critical of the idea of doing exactly the kind of deep water drilling the BP did, because there are no safety precautions at those depths. Not just the depth of the drilling. I mean, everybody's making a big deal of the mile underwater, right?
Right.
That's not the real problem. The water is the problem, because if something bad goes really, really wrong, then the water will take it everywhere in the world if you can't turn it off. It's like, remember Fantasia?
Yeah.
Where Mickey Mouse
just
stopped.
It just kept coming more and more.
It goes more and more and more. Well, this guy, this geologist, whose name I won't use at the moment, but I will privately tell you who and how to get hold of him and all that, he wrote documents a couple of years ago, saying that what they were planning to do was nuts because the formations, which is the technical term for the geology under the Gulf, probably could not safely withstand the pressures from opening up a deep, deep well. They went down 22,500 feet for this well. That's miles.
Unbelievable.
At those depths, the pressures are, get this, write this down, something like on the order of 100,000 pounds per square inch.
It's 4.5 miles deep.
Exactly. You cannot contain, with current engineering, pressures of 100,000 pounds PSI. Just can't. So this was an accident almost set up to inevitably happen. Then we look at what they did, and they did everything wrong. At every decision point, as the documents are coming out, as Congress is making more and more of this stuff available through the hearing process, which has been going on over the last week, we find that BP did everything wrong, as did Transocean, when they were overruled. And they acceded to being overruled by a BP guy on site who said, oh, we're going to take out the drilling mud and put in seawater, and, oh, we're not going to put in spacers to keep the well centered, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's like the perfect storm, George, of catastrophes of catastrophe could, in fact, happen. Because as the well blew, what happens is you have mud and oil and gas a lot of gas, rushing up at the speed of sound up that four-mile pipe. That pipe can't stand it. What happened is the casing literally was blown away. The cement was basically blown out of the way, and you've got a straight line to the top for gas under almost 100,000 PSI.
Oh, my God. It could blow up, couldn't it?
What that does is it causes what's called cavitation, which is supersonic bubbles, which ship propellers run into all the time. That's why you have to replace propellers, because as the props spin in the water, particularly on big ships, Navy ships, whatever,
right,
it basically is a supersonic implosion that basically gouges out little craters in even vanadium steel.
Could you also not sink if you go right over a bubble like that?
Well, exactly. You would, if a bubble came up, which is what I'm going to get to, you would sink every rig and every ship in the region for miles around this wellhead.
Which was a possibility for the Bermuda Triangle when they talked about ships. Yeah.
Exactly. There are occasions where we think ships have encountered hydrates that went to gas.
And they just disappeared.
And because the water no longer has the same buoyancy, and so the ship founders and sinks.
Yeah.
And everybody dies because you can't swim in that either.
You just go down instantly.
You go down and you die, and so we're looking at potentially thousands of people on all those ships and those rigs that are now trying to solve this by drilling two wells, which, by the way, is also exactly the wrong thing to do. Here's the worst-case scenario. As that well, you know, gushing up at that enormous pressure reaches the top, all the way up through we don't know how many layers of geology through 4.5 miles, it could be as many as 50 or 60 different layers of limestone, sand lenses,
mm-hmm.
gas pockets, oil pockets, different oil reservoirs, which they went down through
all,
on the way down.
All pouring into this.
All being pressurized by this 100,000 PSI infinite fountain at the base, at the bottom of this reservoir. This is like turning on the bubble machine. You know, think Lawrence Welk and having no way to turn it off. That's why, by the way, they have not capped the well.
And I got to tell you, if you believe in the abiotic oil theory, like I do, it may never run out.
Well, there is a guy, another guy I want you to have on as a guest. His name is Chris Landau, L-A-N-D-A-U. He has delivered 2 peer-reviewed papers in the last year, one in 2008, one in 2009, on how abiotic oil could be processed and produced right now in this well-stacked series of formations, and no one is telling us whether they're looking at new oil or old oil, and there's a way to tell. So I need to get you that contact info so you can have him on, because he's a heavy hitter, and he was, again, one of the few ahead of the pack predicting things like this could happen before they occurred. Well, let me go back to the worst-case scenario. If this well, as it's pressurizing these upper-level strata, were to create cracks in the ocean floor at the top level, which appears to be happening
it
if we
appears.
Listen to Senator Nelson.
That's right. That's
and
right.
We listen to the NOAA guys on the underwater plume.
Little fissures out there.
Fissures, yes. And they try to cap this well, or the final rupture occurs, you could have the most horrendous gas explosion 50 miles off Louisiana
mm-hmm.
that you can imagine. Think Mount St. Helens underwater.
Underwater.
What that would do is create a cloud of incredible toxic material, which would then drift with the winds over the shore where there are millions of people.
What about a tsunami?
The next step is you would get a tsunami moving at between 400 to 600 miles an hour all across in an expanding ring out from where this event occurred, and the most vulnerable state for that to occur, because nothing is more than 6 inches high, is Florida. It isn't Louisiana. It isn't Mississippi or Alabama. It's Florida. Now, this is what we need to do to solve this problem and to alert ordinary people who are not being taken into account by either government or BP at all. We need something called the mud dog data or the mud log data.
What is that?
Every well that's drilled, you know, it's drilling is a messy process. You got to send a mechanical drill spinning down, crunching through level after level after level. to get to the depth where the oil is. They keep a record, a physical archive of the rocks, the material, the other oil samples. Every foot down is recorded, but it's proprietary. And the only people who have looked at the mud dog data, as it's called, by the riggers on these rigs, is BP. Is BP.
Hiding it.
And they are hiding it. They've been hiding everything. They won't even tell us how much oil is gushing out of here. So what I want the Coast audience to do tonight is to send an email to Barack Obama before his damn speech tomorrow night and tell him that nothing makes any sense if we are only looking at the beginning of the catastrophe and not the cleanup. And to know this, we need independent geologists, both in government and outside of government, with access to this mud log data or mud dog data. And it needs to be not just from this well, but from all the other wells in the Gulf. There's 40,000 wells, George, and each one of those wells has a mud log, which will tell us the strata, the strength, what's in it, the age. In other words, you've got a CAT scan of the entire bottom of the Gulf. So if we're building toward a crisis, this will tell us if, in fact, people are going to have to leave the Gulf Coast to protect themselves and their families with enough warning. Now, it's not going to happen tomorrow. We've got weeks and maybe months as this pressure seeps through these overlying formations.
Let's hope it doesn't.
But it is a ticking time bomb, which in the worst-case scenario could catch a lot of people unawares, because the people that we are trusting to tell us the truth are telling us nothing but damn lies and, you know, giving us Band-Aids and solving, soothing comments like the president who said, oh, we're going to clean it up so it's better than before. Give me a break. Now, number two, we need a network of buoys put in place immediately, like they put in place in the Coral Sea after the tsunami in 2004, to tell us with sophisticated satellite positioning and sophisticated echo sounders, either from NOAA or from the USGS or the US Navy. All these people have warehouses filled with these buoys. They can deploy them in a couple of days. We need to have a moment-by-moment internet-wide display of what's happening to this bubble on the Gulf floor, so ordinary Americans, the ones who pay the taxes, the ones who keep this government going, the ones who believe in the flag and the Constitution, they have a chance, a fighting chance, to see what's going on and get out of the way if it really hits the fan.
All right. Go get Robin.
I'd like to bring on Robin.
I'm here, Richard.
There you
I'm
go,
here.
Robin, you were out there about a week or so ago, weren't you?
I came back. I got home, I think, 4:30 Monday morning, last Monday.
Well, describe the scene for those of us who aren't there.
Okay, there is major concern amongst the people. I went there so I could talk to the people. I haven't seen any representation on the news of anybody other than a politician or BP people or police. And the people are very concerned. The people there do not feel they have time. And this is everyone I spoke with in Texas, Louisiana, and in Alabama. And they are very concerned with the hurricane season beginning. They are very concerned that one woman's dad is a commercial fisherman. He's being paid right now to not fish, being told that he cannot take what are supposed to be the safe fish out of the water to even eat because they need them for restocking.
That's right.
Now, if there's any way that you can determine that these are safe and those are bad.
How would you know unless you ate it, right?
Well, they're in the same body of water. So, you know, it boggles the mind. This is so widespread, and the impact for how many millions of people make their living on the Gulf Coast.
Isn't this amazing the way this happens right on top of this economic crunch we're in? And you know, you get that feeling, we're going to pull out of it, we're going to pull out, and then bang, something else happens.
And they want to open the borders. You know, I mean, the craziness, the people there are so, I you know, distraught or on the verge of almost being hopeless. And how can they bring Wackenhut back into the New Orleans area after what happened with Katrina?
That's frightening. All right, Robin, give me another report later. Let's take a few calls here with Richard and wrap this hour up. Let's go east to the Rockies. Corky in Rochester, New York. Go ahead, Corky.
Hello. I'm glad I finally got through.
Good.
Richard, about a month after the earthquake happened, they come out with a report, a small blip, and I haven't heard nothing after that, about the molten core of the earth shifted 30 feet. Have you heard that?
No, I've not, and I don't think we could possibly measure 30 feet over a distance of 4,000 miles with seismology.
What a disaster, though, Richard. What a, now, you had mentioned a frustration with this administration. Why are you frustrated? What are they doing wrong?
James Carville has been on media, on CNN, because that's where he's being paid to be a consultant these days.
Yeah, that's right.
Every night, basically the raging Cajun, who, as I said on Friday, is my new best friend, because he's one of the few people expressing the outrage that nothing appears to be done. You've got thousands of miles of coastline when you count all those little bays and estuaries along the Gulf Coast. You've got the richest seafood region of the world. You've got oil and gas drilling at great depth under conditions that have not changed in 30, 40 years in terms of safety technology.
I don't think they know what to do.
But they shouldn't be doing what they're doing if they don't know what they're doing. You understand?
I know it.
And you're right. This is the perfect storm, and I am very concerned that unless we get this mudlog data put on the Internet so we all get to see it, and all the independent geologists, I mean, I know a few, like Ron Nix has been on this program. He'd be competent to look at this and say, okay, this formation will break on such and such a time under such and such a load. This formation will stand. This gas will come up. I mean, we need an independent review. This needs to be treated as an invasion, as a war, like World War III, and instead we're mucking around at the edges of the sea, claiming, oh, everything will be fine, we'll seal this in August, and then we can all go back to it, we'll be better than before. Again, give me a break.
Charles Seif's coming on this week, Richard. He's saying you can't nuke it, you can't bomb it, so without that...
What needs to be done, and Chris Landau has a very interesting prescription. He says you need to drill 8 to 10 wells in a radius around 1,500 feet around the current well.
And hopefully
and
take
then you
that
don't,
pressure.
You don't drill into the drill stem because you don't want to
provide
another conduit to the surface for this rushing oil, because the so-called relief wells, if they actually hit the current riser, you'll triple what's coming up.
Well, that's all we need. Thanks. Richard C. Hoagland, that's his update. We'll be back in a moment with John Truman Wolf, Crisis by Design, the untold story of the global financial coup. Wait till you hear this story.